Grace, mercy, and God's peace be to you from God our Father and from our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Our text for this morning is based on our gospel lesson, which was read just moments ago, about mom and the daughter being possessed by a demon, and how things unfolded there. And hopefully we're going to have some lessons, not hopefully, we're going to have some lessons that we can take with us when we leave this day. So that's the thought. And the beginning question, or statement I should say, is this one. It's a simple one. See if you agree with it. Life is not always fair. Now, which one of those kids are you? Are you the pointer or the pointee? Kind of depends, doesn't it? But life isn't fair. And as kids especially, we don't hold things in. We let her out. Life's not always fair. Test results come back from the doctor and they say, cancer. And you say, why me? The divorce papers are served and you say, well, this stinks. The boss calls you into his office and says, we got to cut back. I'm sorry, but we're going to have to let you go. And you say, oh, what now? What do you do or say when the death certificate is signed? When the bankruptcy is filed? What do you say when your world collapses? Our text for this morning, as we read earlier, talks about a mom whose world collapsed around her. Her young daughter became sick, but actually it was more than just sickness. It was demon possession. We don't have a lot of that going on, but it's still around, and it happens. And that was the case there. And she had to say, well, this isn't fair. Why me? Now what? I'm sure she was bewildered. I'm sure she was upset. As any parent doesn't want their kids to be suffering. Perhaps angry, yeah. Maybe depressed. Well, I'm quite confident that there's an element of fear in the unknown for her and her young daughter. Now, as I looked at this text for today, I came up with three things that happened, that she did, that Jesus did, the disciples did, that I hope will be helpful to us, so when our world collapses around us, we have some resources to go to. And the first thing that I'm suggesting is that we discover God's presence. And you're kind of nodding and saying, well, that's no big deal. Of course, as Christians, we know that. But discover God's presence. You know, the first thing we do when the roof caves in is to remember you're not alone. And that's kind of the main point of this particular portion, that God is with you. He never left you. He's been there all along. And I intentionally chose that word discover, because what that implies, what that means, is to open your eyes to see what's already there. It's been there all along. You just discovered it. I'm guessing that many of us, if not most of us, tend to think that God's with us only when things are going well. You know, when your sports team is winning, when you get the raise, when things are going well, when we don't have to wear these stupid masks any longer, you know, we say, well, God's with us. Conversely, he's far from us when things are going poorly. You think that way? Yeah, I think that's very common. But the fact of the matter is, that's simply not true. It's not true. He has never left us. Doesn't matter the circumstance, he's right there with you. He never forsakes you. I mean, one of my favorite all-time Bible promises is from Isaiah 43. And it says this, when you go through the deep waters and great troubles, in other words, when your world collapses, what does God promise? A promise, get that promise. I might be with you. I will be with you. When you go through the rivers of difficulty, you won't drown. You're going to get wet. You may be unhappy, but you won't drown. When you walk through the fires of oppression, you won't be burned. And that's 700 years before Jesus. So we're talking a 2,700-year-old promise. Is it still valid? Yes, it is. I love that promise. Because what that implies, what that means, what that states is that no matter what's going on in your life, you have God's himself as your ally. So our text, let's set the stage. You heard it, but let's recap a bit. It says, a Canaanite woman from the vicinity came. The vicinity, we're talking the northeast corner of what is Israel, right along the Mediterranean Sea. That's where the Canaanites, the Syro-Phoenician area. So she's not a Jew. She's not part of the flock. She's not part of the believing community that was thought of as Israel, of being the select few. So she's an outsider. A Canaanite woman from the vicinity came to him. Who's him? Jesus. Crying out. So it's not just a simple, hey, you busy, buddy? No, crying out. She's desperate. She's desperate. And what does she say? Lord, Son of David. So she's acknowledging this heritage of who this Jesus guy was, that he's going on from David, which was hundreds of years before that. She says, Son of David, have mercy on me. And then she lays out her predicament. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession. Okay. Then Jesus answered her, woman, you have great faith. He's saying, you know, you're not even part of the flock. You're not part of the congregation. And yet you're asking me for help. Good job, gal. And here's the part. Granted. Yay! I mean, you could almost see her doing the happy dance. She didn't know it yet because she's still with Jesus. She has to go back home to find out her daughter was healed. But at that same moment, as Jesus made that pronouncement, her daughter was healed. That demon, out, gone. She's back to full health again. Her daughter was healed from that very hour. Jesus promised, it delivered. Wow. Good for her. Good for her little girl. She received incredibly more than this mom probably thought possible. She was asking. I mean, don't you ask when you go through things, but you're saying, well, I'll ask God. I'll pray. You know, the doctors do this, or the finances come together, whatever it might be. But if it doesn't happen, you don't go, eh. She hoped, and it happened. But you see, my friends, when God is in the mix, things will always be different. Different, I say. Not exactly the way we may ask, but they'll be different. I mean, already back in the Old Testament, we read about Moses, and he's writing about God's dependability. Here's what Moses said, and it's still true today as far as I'm concerned, Deuteronomy 31:8. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will, and what's the word? Maybe, sometimes, hopefully, never leave you nor forsake you. And as a result, what does Moses remind us of? Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. Now that's hard to do. That's hard to do. But because of the former, God's with us, we can do the latter. Not be afraid. I don't know how it's going to end necessarily, but I'm confident God's with me and going to see me through. Isn't that great? When your world is collapsing, remember God remains right there with you and cares about you. So, discover God's presence. Second thing to consider when things aren't going the way you hope they will, and that is determine God's purpose. Need to unwind that a little bit. You see, when your world collapses, look at the situation from someone's perspective other than yours, primarily God's perspective. Instead of just saying, why me? This isn't fair. This stinks. This is horrible. Instead of saying that, doesn't mean it doesn't happen, that you don't think it, but ask yourself several questions. Maybe ask yourself, Lord, what do you want to teach me through this mess? Not that we want to be taught, but yeah. Or perhaps, what do you want me to learn? I don't want to learn, Lord. I just want it to go away. But maybe he wants something more for us. Or maybe, is there any possible good that can come out of this? I think that's always helpful, that last one. Okay, this is not what I wanted. How is God going to use this in the long term for something positive, something good? Now, Peter, you know, close follower, often outspoken advocate for Jesus, he clarifies this concept of when things collapse around you. And he clarified to his readers that he was writing to why trials, bad things may happen to us in the first place. And he's writing to the Christian folks in his first letter, chapter 1, verse 6 and 7. He says this, he explains. He said, at present, you may be temporarily harassed by all kinds of trials. This is no accident. Oh, I can underline those four. No accident. Of course, when I read that, I'm thinking, do I really want these harassments, the trials? And yet, Peter's saying, you know, it's not an accident. In other words, if you're a believer, nothing comes into your life by accident. And you're going, I don't know if I like that part. Now, you got to remember, I'm not saying, nor is Peter saying, that God causes evil. He doesn't. Keep that straight. God does not cause evil. Now, a lot of things, a lot of evil that we bring or happens in our lives, we bring upon ourselves, some real stupid choices perhaps or decisions. Or a lot of the evil comes from other folks who aren't interested in our welfare and it gets imposed on us. That's all true. But God has given us a free will to make choices in life. And some of those choices don't always turn out quite as good as we had hoped. We may think this is a smart move, and yet things may happen to the contrary. And yet we know God's proved over and over again that he can bring good out of not so good situations. I hope you've experienced that. If you haven't, I want you to start looking. Keep your eyes open to see how God is working through a stinky situation in your life, whether it's a big one or whether it's a little one. You see, there's a punchline. God can come out, or good can come out of bad. We'd rather not have the bad in the first place, that's true. But Peter is saying bad things in your life may in fact turn out to be a good thing in the long run. You see, we got a track record to look at. God is well experienced in reshaping lives that need help. The truth is, we really don't know exactly how we'll react to a crisis situation until we're in it. You agree with that one? Yeah, it's not to say, I want to plan in 10th grade for this to happen when I'm 47. It's not that you're planning for that. We don't exactly know how things are going to turn out, how we'll react to a situation until we're in it. That's all true. But what happens, or what we see, is your response to a crisis can reveal your foundation, what's really going on inside of you, where your principles, where your values, where your hope is based. So your response to a crisis can reveal your true character, your maturity, your security, your values, and your faith. Now, I'm guessing we would all agree that it's pretty easy to believe God when things are going great. Yep, God's with us. Yay! But when you get the pink slip, when you or your young daughter get sick, when you get laid off, that's when you discover what's really in your heart and where your true trust is placed. Okay, let's look at our text then as far as what mom do. This foreigner, this non-Jew, coming to Jesus, asking for help. What'd she do when her world collapsed? Here's what it says. Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre. That's spelled wrong. It should be T-Y. So you Goodyear fans, you might be happy, but that's not that. Tyre is a region up in northwest Israel. Tyre and Sidon, they're part of a twin city region of northern Israel. Okay, so Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre, Sidon. So he's not in Jewish territory. He's in the foreign lands. And this Canaanite woman from the vicinity came to him. There it is. What do you do when the issues of life turn on you? She turned to Jesus. Such a simple thing, or so it seems. I mean, she had no reason to look to this guy for any help. But what did she do? She did the right thing. Even though she may not have fully understood it, she turned to Jesus. And that's, I think, the first takeaway for this morning, friends. When crisis is happening, when the bottom falls out, where do we turn? Inward? Upward. Turn to Jesus. Now, you've been watching enough TV weather channels over the years to know that devastating storms, bad weather, never leave a community the same. What's going on, Ida, down in Louisiana? What a mess, what a disaster, as well as all the other things that are going on around us. So we watch this stuff and we've become immune to it to some extent because we see it so often. But one of the things we see, it doesn't matter where it is, when these storms come, what is left in its wake? Often destruction, death, horrible situations. And the thing that you notice over and over again is what was there is different after the storm. You see, a storm never leaves a community the same, never. And the fact is true in weather, and it's true about our life experiences. You're changed every time a crisis happens in your life. You're changed. You're going to be different. How? May not necessarily know, but you're going to be. You see, every trial in life will make you one of two things. You will either be bitter or you'll be better. Bitter or better? What's the difference? Well, in our spelling, we would say it's that one little letter, I. I make the difference. And by that, I mean it's how I choose to respond. I can't change the circumstances necessarily. The storms may come, absolutely true. But what am I going to do about it? How am I going to respond? What's going to be my attitude? Will I be bitter or will I be better from that difficulty? Who can answer that question? Well, from the disciple standpoint, you think about it. What was the crucifixion for Jesus? From their perspective, this looked like a horrible miscarriage of justice. I mean, it was a senseless tragedy, they thought. I mean, they'd watched Jesus grow in popularity and the things that he had done, how the Son of God made the world and did incredible miracles. Peter correctly identified, you're the Christ. You're the answer to fulfillment of promises made by God back to Adam and Eve. You're the man. You can do incredible things. So they're strutting around saying, this is pretty good stuff. 2.5+ years, they're following him, and things are looking promising. He's the answer to our problems. And they watched him do this for almost 3 years. And now all of a sudden, Jesus waltzes in to Jerusalem and he allows the Roman soldiers to treat him like a horrible criminal. And they nail him to a death-resulting cross. And the disciples had to go, what is going on? Where's God in all of this? Well, as we ask that question, I hope you remember your Sunday school lessons about what Jesus did and why he did it on that cross. Pretty simple, isn't it? Why did he die? He died. That sure sounds like a defeat, doesn't it? A defeat. That doesn't sound like a victory. And yet we know better because of our Sunday school lessons and what we learn regularly. You see, God, my friends, can turn a negative into a positive. And this is the second thing I want you to take away with you this morning. God can turn a negative, your negative, into a positive. Now, I find myself in those difficult circumstances and situations asking in life, how's he going to fix this one? Boy, I don't see any way out here. This is horrible. How in the world is he going to take that negative thing in my life and bring good out of it? How will he turn a minus into a plus? Well, over the years, my friends, I found that he does it in the same way for all of us. He takes that minus, that's a minus, okay, remember your math, and he makes a cross, a plus out of it. Isn't that what a cross is? It's a plus sign. He takes that negative and he turns it into a positive. God loves to turn crucifixions into resurrections. Remember, he specializes in hopeless situations. Our Canaanite mom, she found that out, didn't she? Her daughter was healed. Now, I hope that you're one of the fortunate ones who have discovered and learned over the years how God has a plan and a purpose for you. In fact, God often has multiple purposes behind problems. God can use problems to shape us, to motivate us in the right direction, kind of, you know, getting us going there. And it's not unusual for God to light a fire under us to get moving. Whoa, I guess I'm not going to go there anymore. He often uses problems to correct us. I said no, and yet we do it anyway. No, he says, don't go there. Yeah, there are many, many reasons why God uses circumstances in your life to help us. But not only to help you, but also in turn, it's a two-edged piece to this. You get the comfort, but he says, I want you to comfort other folks who may need the same comfort that you've needed. And now, since you've experienced it, you can share it. Here's how St. Paul highlighted this concept, his second letter to the Corinthians, 1:4. Paul said, Christ wonderfully comforts and strengthens who? Us. Okay, you got problems? True, true, true. But God, or Christ, strengthens us in our hardships and trials. Notice it says in them. It doesn't say that we don't have them. So there's an implication that you're going to have them. You're going to have them. I don't want them. Go away. But we're going to have them. So there's an assumption. In our hardships, Christ is going to strengthen us. And Paul goes on to say, he asks the question, why does he do that? Well, first, for strengthening us, he said that first, but here's the second part. When others are troubled, we can pass on to them the same help and comfort God has given us. Oh, I give. Now, that's a wonderful passage. I love that. It's very comforting. But when I read that, it kind of has an assignment feel, kind of like the teacher hinting at an assignment. Kind of like what we're doing with these masks. It's optional, you know, but we as a staff feel we need to wear them to set an example. Okay, so we're doing that. We're being told to enjoy and savor the love, comfort, and help we receive. But then it makes it very clear that we are to pass on that comfort and help to someone else who needs it. And that brings us finally to our third thing I want us to take away from this morning when our world collapses around us. And that is, we need to depend on God's power. Again, as Christians, we say, yeah, pretty obvious. But it's not quite that obvious for an awful lot of folks. One of the things I've discovered is that trials, problems, difficult, they're tiring. Physically tiring. I'm pooped going through this. You're thinking, well, it's no big deal. Well, it poops me out physically. I get tired sometimes when I'm having to deal with problems. They drain me of energy. You notice that in your life? Perhaps. Dealing with problems seems often to drain the energy out of me, and I can't quite think as straight as I would like to or quite function the way I would want to. I'm pooped. And what I found over the years is I need, in those situations, several things. First, I need some physical rest. It's good to sleep. You know what I do when I come home from church on Sunday mornings? Take a nap. You guys tire me out. I'm pooped. I need to regroup physically. But I also find out I need more than that as well. I need a source beyond myself. And of course, you know that source, don't you? It's not necessarily a what, it's a who. And that ultimate power source, of course, is Jesus. Now, I found this fascinating. This next slide. 57 times in the New Testament, the word power is used. It's dynamis, power. 57 times. And it's always in the context of God, of power, and dealing with situations. And what God is saying as we read this 57 times to us, he's offering to you and me a life of power that you will not believe until you experience it. That same power that raised Jesus on Easter, available to you. That same power that healed the Canaanite woman's daughter, available to you. Ooh, that's good power. I mean, doesn't the whole Easter experience and event make it crystal clear? No situation is entirely hopeless. There is no problem too difficult when God's in the picture. If God can raise the dead, if he can restore life to a mom's afflicted daughter, he can resurrect a dead marriage. If God can raise the dead, he can restore a strained relationship with family or friends. If God can raise the dead, he can infuse new life into your career. If God can raise the dead, he can lead you through your difficult financial situation. If God can raise the dead, he can resurrect your health. That's power. And it comes only from one place. It's in the person of Jesus Christ. When you get Him in your life, His Spirit in your life, you got real power available to you. The question is, are we going to tap into that? Or are we going to pay lip service to it and ignore it? I found it interesting over the years, many decades already, that talking with a lot of folks as we're dealing with their problems and talking about how we deal with things, they're actually a bit afraid of having God in their lives. They're saying, well, yeah, God's powerful, God can do it and all that, but they really don't want to kind of let God in. They kind of keep Him at a distance. And what they've shared with me over the years is they're afraid to let God in. And they keep the barriers up because they think if God becomes a real part of my life, then somehow I'm going to become a weirdo, some kind of religious fanatic. You know, those guys that are in church all the time, those guys that are praying, those guys that try and do a number of things in the community. That's weird. And they're afraid that if God is within them, they won't be able to have any fun in life. Those Christians, ugh. So they keep God at a distance. They're afraid of losing their self-control. My friends, the truth is exactly the opposite. When God's Spirit fills your life, He doesn't make you an out-of-control fanatic. He makes you a self-controlled human being, someone created in God's image, someone connected and receiving all the benefits of family membership. Paul, writing to a young Christian pastor, said this: "For the Spirit that God has given us does not make us timid. Instead, His Spirit fills us with," one of the 57 times, "power. And along with that power, a love. And along with the power and love, self-control. We become able to do things that we never thought we could." I'm fairly confident that in a group this size, and those of you watching online at home throughout the country and world, I'm sure that there are some folks who feel that they're at the end of their rope and barely hanging on. Don't raise your hands, but you're probably here today. Don't feel that you have any options or any future. Some folks may be even wondering if life is worth living and continuing. How do I keep on keeping on when I feel like throwing in the towel? Fair question. My friends, there's the final takeaway for today: that God is faithful and dependable. He's always been there, and He always will. And we know from history and experience that He will be with you and provide exactly what you need for your unique problem or difficulty when you need it. Isaiah wraps things up this morning for us. "Don't you yet understand? Don't you know by now that the everlasting God, the creator of the farthest parts of the earth, never grows faint or weary? No one can fathom the depths of His understanding. He gives power to the tired, worn out, and strength to the weak. You can count on it." Amen.